Hey guys, welcome back to the Kodakata Podcast. On this week's episode, we are joined by YouTuber Hone Money Lawson, who is a man of many titles, as you will soon find out. We talk about his long journey with Japanese on the show, all the way to his life in Japan. So, as always, if you can support the podcast, be sure to check out our Patreon. This was a very fun conversation to have, and we hope you enjoy it as much as we did. What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Kodakata Podcast. My name is Raza, and I am joined by my co-host, Eric. We talk to people of all types of backgrounds about their lives in Japan, studying Japanese, or even tips and tricks on how to learn the language. This week, we're joined by a very special guest in Hone Money Lawson.
Yeah, so Hone Money Lawson is a YouTuber who makes videos in Japanese, specifically in Kansai-ben. And he started learning Japanese when he was 14 and did a couple of study abroad there before living there full-time now. And his Japanese is really phenomenal, so we really want to get a closer look behind how he learned Japanese, and specifically Kansai-ben as well. But before we get into that, Lawson, can you give us a quick background of who you are and where you're at today?
Thank you, Eric. Oh, no. So, so my name is Hone Money Lawson. My real name is Lawson, and I'm currently working in Tokyo. And I run a blog and a YouTube channel, and also recently a TikTok channel, all in Japanese, talking about culture, my experiences here, and some banter. And I started studying Japanese when I was 14, and now I'm unfortunately 29, so it's been 15 years. And I've been living in Tokyo for 6 years now, working in a pretty Japanese company.
I'm glad we have the honor of speaking to a TikTok star today. It's unexpected. first time on the Kodakata Podcast. Oh,
is that why I've become a TikTok superstar?
You have, as of today, as of right now.
Those bottles going straight to Raz's head.
Hey, we don't talk about that, though. But what we are here today for, other than you being a TikTok star, and remember, you will shout out the Kodakata Podcast at some point, sponsored, by the way. Anyway, but where we are...
I see what you've done there.
Yeah.
Marketing 101.
Marketing 101, here we go. Went to business school for a reason.
Here are the results.
It is all for this one moment. Just it's building up. But of course, we're here because of your long-standing relationship with Japan, Japanese culture. And I mean, on the podcast, one thing we always like to talk about is kind of the roots and how you actually got in touch with Japanese culture for the first time, because it could be many different reasons. You know, it could be travel, you were interested in the culture after seeing it once, or maybe you just really like anime. You know, there's many ways, and every way is always really fun to hear about, you know. And we're really interested, Lawson. So what was your first experience with Japanese culture?
So my first experience was most likely, so when I was in high school, in my first or second year, we had a Japan Day. So I think I was about 12 or 13. It was a Japan Day, and it was a 9 to 3:30 where we had, basically each hour was an aspect of Japanese culture rolled into one. So we did some like kanji writing, you know, writing our name in hiragana, katakana and stuff, made some sushi, classic, drunk some green tea, classic. Dressed up in a kimono, classic. So it was like a kind of all-round day. And that was because my high school was a foreign language high school, so we all had to do foreign languages, so everything was kind of related to immersing people in foreign cultures quite a lot of the time. And so one of the days just happened to be Japan Day, and that was the first time I'd ever come across Japan. Obviously I'd heard of Japan before, but didn't really know much. And that was kind of when I first got a slight inkling of it. Oh, this is pretty cool. I like this. This language just looks really crazy difficult. And that's where it kind of started there. That was probably my first time.
I see. And I guess to clarify, does this mean you also had a day for every other culture? Had a Germany day, had a France day, had a...
I don't remember any other days. and that could be because I just wasn't that interested. But I remember we had a Japan day. I think it's because at that time, at my school, like, you could study German, French, Spanish, and a few other languages.
Right.
But mainly European languages. And then that's when we had a teacher who kind of had ties with Japan join us that year. So she was like, hey, if it's a, you know, it's a foreign language speciality high school, why are we just staying with like French? You know, come on, that's across the pond, you know, because obviously we're in London.
Right.
You know, it's just across the pond. That's a bit, you know, not boring, but we can do more than that, right? We can, you know, venture out. So she came up with the idea of we should do a Japan day. Because obviously we just like in UK high schools and like primary schools, you learn French very early on. Because it's just like the go-to language, I guess.
Right.
But she kind of had the idea of, you know, we could venture out further. You know, maybe Japan should open up people's eyes to something completely different, which is what happened. I guess I'm a result of that, but yeah.
So did you already speak French by that time?
So I've never been able to speak French. Like, I took part in classes, but... I can like ask people if they speak French, if they speak English, like, tu parles anglais? And then if they don't, then I give up. But I'd studied French for about a year and a half then. So 1 year in primary school, and then I just started high school. So not really.
I see. But hey, you can just pull up to someone who doesn't know French, drop the line. You know French.
Yeah. I'm just going around saying, do you speak English and French? And everyone's thinking I'm fluent. So.
Working proficiency, put it down on the resume.
Yeah. French is on the resume.
We got a polyglot on our hands here.
Polyglot TikTok superstar.
Yep.
The title gets longer.
It gets longer. I wonder what it's going to be at the end of the podcast.
We got a long time to go.
We got a long time to go. We'll go check back in, see how far we've gotten at the end.
Keep a list of all the keywords.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get you the best role in Japan after this one.
Yeah, can't wait.
Again, sponsored by the Korekara podcast. We got you, don't worry.
Marketing 101.
Marketing 101. We might actually roll on to 102 by some time in the podcast.
About 30 minutes in, we'll be on 102.
There's a crash course here. We keep it quick and fast and worth it. But I mean, you mentioned the teacher with Japanese ties coming in and bringing about more like, oh, we can do better. So I remember you talking about this on your videos, that you talked to her and it kind of got you into starting Japanese, right? Like, just a little couple classes here and there before you really kind of found it as a passion, right?
Yeah, exactly. So at the time, that teacher was actually my French teacher. So she was like, she was a polyglot. So she could speak like French, German, Italian, Japanese, English, like crazy amounts of languages. And so she was my French teacher at the time. And then she basically said to me, I'm thinking of, I want to start up Japanese officially, but I can't do that straight away because we don't know if everyone's interested. So me and a few other people were invited by her to go to her, you know, Japanese club. So she made a Japanese club Monday after school, and it was 3:30 to 4:30, 1 hour. And she would teach us Japanese. So just, you know, very, very basic hiragana, katakana, and then a few kanji, but didn't want to scare us too much, right? And also just some phrases, you know, like hajimemashite and all stuff like that. And I did that for a year. So that's why I went for that for a whole year. Every Monday. And that's when I kind of really started getting into it, because I was like, this is really cool. You know, I guess I was like 13, 14 at times. So it's very, very like a simple mindset. But I remember thinking like French is like, yeah, that's really easy. It's just like romantic English. You know, it's just like, it just sounds the same almost. But then with Japanese, I'd look at it and I was like, well, this is just, what is this? This is completely different. Like, oh my God, like so interesting. And I remember thinking of it like a secret language. Like if I studied Japanese and I wrote notes to my friends in Japanese and threw them across class, no one would know what they said. But in French, you could probably work it out. You know,
right?
Interesting, intéressant. You could guess that. It's too close. But like, if you write that in kanji, no one gonna guess that. So I really liked it. It was just like so interesting. It really struck me because it was, you know, if I looked at it, I didn't understand it. I did understand it, but I wanted to. So that 1 year was like really important to me because that's where I kind of started getting really interested in it.
Right. Yeah.
That's interesting because like most of our guests, like they had a cultural interest first and then they got interested in the language. But right. Like you had a linguistic interest.
Yeah.
First,
yeah. Right? So I totally was like got interested via the language. I didn't even really understand Japanese culture or know anything about Japanese culture at the time. But I really just like the language itself because it just looks so beautiful and also so complicated that I really liked the idea of the challenge. You know, three scripts. I was like, come on, come on, guys. Like, why? You know, I'm going to have to try that. Like, that just sounds fun, right? From the linguistic approach.
Yeah, I can just imagine you coming back home and you show your mom some Japanese, and she's like, "Oh, is this an art piece?" You're like, "No, it's my first 40-stroke kanji."
This took me 37 minutes.
It's an art piece. It's our secret language. Don't worry, I got you.
But you don't know what it means, Mom.
But I do.
You don't know what I'm writing.
Come join me in learning Japanese and find out.
Sponsored by the Korekara podcast.
On TikTok. Yeah, but I guess like you got to spend time going and really making it your own, kind of being a secret language of yours, taking up the challenge. I mean, of course, very daunting, especially coming from a linguistic school and mainly focusing on European languages, like you mentioned. Again, a complete one-off. This not even the same script at this point. You're going pretty hard, and I mean, you don't even have an official Japanese program yet. It's a club. So was that club eventually able to get materialized into a program by your teacher?
Yeah, so after 1 year, so the whole basis of that club was that the head teacher at the time said, look, just do it for a year as a trial. Make sure the kids are actually interested in it. So there was like 10 of us in there. And to be honest, like, because it was after school, there were some kids that like would mess around because we were like, you know, 12, 13.
Right.
But, you know, most of us kind of were really interested in the whole idea of this completely different language. So the teacher, she was, you know, did it really well, went to the head teacher afterwards and said, look, you know, I've got like 7-8 students who are really into it. Let's put it as an option onto the courses, because why not? You know, we are a language school, right? Why would you not do that? I mean, she did it really well. Like, it's like the head teacher can't say no, right? When it's a language school and you're like, let's do Japanese. There's no way you can say no, right? Like, when you got enough students saying yes. So then from the following year, I was able to choose it as an official subject. And that's when then I dropped French and German. So I could do Japanese because, I mean, we were meant to do two languages as a rule. So I had to do French and German. But then they kind of said, you know, Japanese, you can just one Japanese is enough. Like, you've already got three scripts, you know, so like that's basically three languages. So like, you don't have to worry about French and German anymore. It's like, okay, thank you. win-win.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad your teacher hit you with the 1 year free trial, where it worked out
exactly. Yeah, it worked out really well.
She planned it out. She had the business plan from the moment
she knew what she was doing. Yeah,
how can I get these students into Japanese?
foot in the door method. Yeah.
But hey, it worked out for the better. And I mean, at what point would you say you kind of made it your passion? Because I mean, it was a free trial at first, and then you kind of got into it as the classic foot in the door and kind of got you into the secret language here. But at what point did you kind of feel like, oh, this is something I really want to do moving forward with my life?
Yeah, so it was actually really early on. So, you know, once you've done the 1 year trial period of the after school club, and then I started officially studying it. There was so much to study, right? There was so much to study. especially because with that course that we did at the time, it was on the same timeline as the French and German courses. So you're meant to start it like a year or two beforehand and kind of like do a slow approach. And then you get into like the studying for the exams. Whereas we had to, we only had 2 years at the time until our first exam. So it was kind of like a fast pace. We have to catch up type thing. So we were studying like on a really fast pace, like loads of grammar, like learning like 20 new kanji a week, which, I mean, I was only like 14, so that was quite a big thing at the time. And I remember just thinking that I really wanted to learn more about Japanese, because I could tell that I was just kind of scraping at the top of the iceberg, and there was so much more to learn and so much that I had to learn to actually be able to speak it. Because I did, I don't know, for some reason I wanted to be fluent in it, because it just seemed so cool at the time to be fluent in another language and for that to be Japanese. And I think, I don't know, if I go like the exact moment where I realized that I really want to take it further, it was, I think it was, I remember one day where I said to my mom, I want to get some materials, like an exercise book. And I mean, back in the day, we had like cassette tapes, right? Because this was like 15 years ago.
Right.
But like a cassette tape for like learning Japanese outside of my schoolwork, because I really want to like kind of go to the next level. And I think that was the first time I'd ever done that with anything at school. Like mostly I just kind of study at school, do my homework, you know, do the exams. That was kind of, that was school. But with Japanese, I kind of wanted to take it to the next level and kind of get fluent as quickly as I could. And I remember saying to my mom, can I get this book? And I remember we went searching around town for this book, and each like place we went to, it was sold out for some reason, because maybe just probably no one was buying it and they only had one, but some person would buy that. I don't know. I remember one day I was on the bus with my mom. We went to like two different towns to like go to the bookshop, and we finally found it. I mean, we got that. And I remember taking this book home, and then the whole weekend I was listening to the cassette of people being like, kore wa pen desu. And like, oh my God, this is a pen. Yes. Look at me. I'm understanding next level. and back in the day as well, like we only had like a big, like a cassette player. So I was like sitting in the front room at home next to TV, and my mom's like watching TV, and in the background, just be like, Ashita wa nani o shimasu ka? And like, mom's like, what are you doing? And I'm learning for the future. and that's when I really got into it, because it started like becoming something that I was doing on my own time as well.
Right.
And not just, it was no longer just school for me, you know?
Right. I'm sure Pico Taro must have gone through the same experience, because
can you imagine?
He really found out this is a pen to a new level. But it's also really interesting that you bring that up, because I think around maybe the same timeline, maybe a little bit after, we did have one of our guests, she actually was in London looking for the same resources out here, and she was able to find it after a grueling search as well, so she may have been in your way potentially there.
It was all her.
It was all her. She was buying it all up.
She was going out of her way to buy them before me.
You're always one step behind, but she messed up at one store and you took full advantage of it.
Yeah, I got that edition.
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting. And I mean, you did end up going to Oxford for Japanese. And I mean, I'm sure that all that time you got from the extra effort you put into Japanese, it must have helped out a lot in that process, right?
Yeah. Yeah, with Oxford, it definitely was a big help, because with the Oxford Japanese course, I'm not sure what it is like now, because it's 10 years since I actually entered Oxford, but at the time you didn't have to have any previous Japanese learning experience. So literally you could start from zero, as long as you obviously had passion and like a want to do it. You couldn't just turn up and be like, yeah, I'll do Japanese. That's not obviously how it goes, but you didn't actually need prior experience. So me having 4 years at high school and the 1 year trial period, as now we're calling it, but,
the free trial.
I'm gonna have to use that from now on, the trial days, Homony Lawson.
Yeah, I mean, one saying that we actually just got from our other podcast was someone was talking about COVID as the COVID arc, the anime arc. So,
oh my God, COVID arc.
So maybe we started to decide like, oh, maybe this is how we got to refer to it too.
Yeah, exactly. Halfway through, you just start saying about thinking. Like,
yeah, the COVID arc, man. Yeah, it's been going on for too long. There's too much filler.
All right, yeah. So to go back to what I said, yeah, the 4 years that I had in high school, really did help because it gave me such a good base for the Oxford interview as well.
Right.
And the Oxford interview as well. Usually they don't have this, but I got interviewed slightly in Japanese as well. Like part of it was in Japanese, which is really funny because I was told that wouldn't happen. So like, and I'd only studied for 4 years. So 4 years of Japanese studying in high school where it was kind of mainly just like a few lessons a week. I was, you know, I could barely speak any Japanese after 4 years. So I remember my Oxford interview, like there was one of the interviews that had the Japanese teachers there. And then the Japanese woman just turned to me and was like, "Chotto nihongo de yoroshii desu ka?" And I was like, "What the fuck?" That was not on the list. Come on, like, you told me to read a few books, but come on, like.
Classic. I remember being like,
"Hi, oh my gosh." Absolutely, like, so nervous. But it did help because, having that background and kind of a little bit of an understanding. I mean, 4 years is still not a great understanding of like Japanese, but it was still enough of understanding to kind of help me, especially throughout the whole of the interview. But I mean, the whole interview process isn't just language based. There's a lot about Japanese culture and history and your passion about Japan and stuff. But it did help definitely on the language front.
Right. Yeah, I bet they're wondering, they're scheming it up like, oh, how can we prank these guys?
Yeah, I could tell, like, she was definitely looking like, when can I drop the Japanese language question in Japanese?
She was ready to bring out the Nihongo Jozu right real quick. Yeah.
I mean, to see how I responded. Was I going to say arigato and be like, oh, he's not actually saying no? Or was it going to be like, iya, zenzen dekimasen. Right, you're in. You're in Oxford. You've got an offer.
That's all I needed to hear. Yeah, I mean, you're probably on the higher end too. I mean, considering that you didn't have to have any prior Japanese knowledge. They're just waiting right. You could have probably just written down one hiragana character and you would have been set. You'd be like, oh, you're ahead of the class here. You're going to be put in our advanced class.
Just walk in right now like, ichi, ni, san. Yo. Yo.
This is the secret of getting into the Oxford Japanese program. Maybe not anymore, as you've...
Yeah, it might have changed.
The times might have changed.
More competition.
Too many people know the secret sauce now, unfortunately. Yeah,
the trial period.
I wonder if they have a trial period over there at Oxford now. Yeah,
they might.
They learned from your previous teacher. Like, oh, that really worked out. We have a Japanese program now, thanks to it. So how do we get funding? There we go. Oh, that's how Rosetta Stone did it. Okay.
That's the secret.
But yeah, I mean, on the podcast, we usually see a good amount of people either learning purely based on classroom learning, and also you see a good chunk of people who purely learn it based on self-teaching, immersion, and really just, I guess, being in Japanese all the time, as they would say it. But as someone who's been so deeply enrooted with a classroom environment for so long, especially getting started so early, how would you say that helped or maybe didn't help you in other ways?
So yeah, so as you know, for me, I was mainly classroom based for most of it until my study abroad.
Right.
But the classroom, like the lessons and having that, was so important. Especially because I think it gave me a really good base for my Japanese understanding. Because as you know, obviously, you know, Japan has loads of grammar, Japanese has loads of grammar, and it's just confusing, right? And just things like the verb coming at the end of the sentence. I still remember now the first time I got told that, and I was like, what? Like, how could that happen? How could you have a verb at the end of the sentence? Like, what? How could you ever understand what they're trying to say? I remember being so shocked.
How dare
you
do that to me?
How do people live with this? but I remember like things like that, where having a teacher there to explain that to me and explain how it works, and just the real small detail parts about Japanese grammar, which can be so confusing, right?
Right.
Like differences between like wa and ga, just all things like that, where I think if I was studying on my own, I would have struggled.
Right.
Or it would have taken a lot longer, I reckon. But having the classroom for 4 years, and then when I went into Oxford, I still had lessons for all that time as well. So, and I mean, even more lessons than I did in high school. So it was a really good base. It kind of built up my knowledge and understanding of the Japanese language and how it kind of formulates itself, which then like became it was like so helpful, because then when I was unleashed in Japan.
Unleashed. Right, and lost and unchained. Unchained. New Netflix series coming this summer.
Oh my God. So then when I went on my, so I studied abroad twice,
right.
Once for 4 months and once for 1 year. But then I feel like looking back now, I had such a good base of understanding for the Japanese language. So, which it really helped me then to kind of feel confident in what I was speaking. So I could go out there and speak to people without kind of caring about making mistakes. So I understood that I would make some mistakes. So obviously I'm human and I wasn't completely fluent at the time anyway, but I had enough confidence to understand that, yeah, I can probably make sense to the point where I can talk to people. I think that then really helped me immerse myself in Japan to then kind of push my Japanese to another level. So it was a really good base for me. I definitely would recommend it.
I see. So you say kind of getting the fundamentals down before actually going into Japan, getting into the full immersion was a very helpful aspect of the classroom learning for you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You said it way prettier than me, but yes.
No, I can't outdo the TikTok star here, don't worry.
keyword alert.
Keyword alert. Make sure to shout it out in the comments every time, I guess.
Sponsored by Korikara Podcast.
Sponsored. you got it down. I mean, I don't even need to say anything anymore. You got me covered, Lawson. Hey, marketing 102.
102. We have ended 102.
Let people do the advertising for you.
Oh my. Oh my.
Oh man. But no, all jokes aside though, kind of getting into your study abroad then with your fundamentals down, kind of getting into the Lawson Unleashed arc, if we want to call it that.
I love it. I'm loving this. It's fun.
Yeah, we were making your whole your story into an anime, I guess.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, I mean, Netflix, I hope you're listening. like, I guess we're gonna have multiple deals after this. Gonna have a drama.
Yeah, you're gonna have to tell someone your phone number so you can just get them all the deals coming in, man.
True. We're gonna bring out our subsidiary, Korikara Consulting. Will be your firm.
Oh my God, he's got it all figured out.
Don't worry, we got you covered here, Lawson. You already know, man. We got you. But yeah, now again, going back into the Lawson Unleashed arc or Unchained,
yeah,
whatever we want to call it, maybe both. Before the TikTok arc, of course. But this is all the buildup. It's all the buildup. there's not. You always got to look into the journey, not the end, right?
The journey. Yeah. I love it. I love it.
But yeah, I mean, going through that, I mean, landing in Japan with your solid fundamentals down, I mean, of course, at the same time, you are going into a completely different country for the first time. And of course, yeah, you had your Japan day, you got to dress up in a kimono, but probably not the same as actually being in Japan yet. But I guess now you've landed in Japan for the first time for a study abroad. Did anything maybe catch you off guard or kind of was different from what you were maybe expecting when you first got there?
So nobody was speaking standard Japanese. So because I went to so I was in Hyogoken the first time. So I studied abroad for 4 months, and I remember it's so funny. Like, so in the first few weeks we had loads of like meetups at the university where it's kind of like Koryukai and all the stuff for us to like be able to make friends. Like they always kind of like Japanese universities are really friendly to the ryugakusei. They always make loads of events to kind of make you feel welcome. And I remember going to all these events and being like, hey, like, you know, konnichiwa, I'm Lawson. And then people just speak in Kansai then, right?
Right.
And I just remember being like, well, hang on, like this is not what I studied. Like, this is not how they're meant to speak. I was so shocked because, I mean, it was 4 years. I had a little bit of confidence. It was 4 years, and I had 6 months in Oxford, where also in Oxford I had lessons every day. So it was like completely different to high school. The level and like the amount of immersion I had in Japanese language classes just increased like 500%. So I had like this you know, 6 months of kind of like an advanced level course where I'd gone really fast and learned stuff at a really fast pace. And my 4 years in high school. So I had a bit of confidence and I, you know, that I could talk to people and I was speaking Japanese to my teacher in class. It was a very, very simple Japanese. I wasn't speaking about like political issues or anything. But then I went to Japan and people were just like speaking Kansai then. And I'm like, what? Like, this is, how can this be so different? Like, what did I learn? What? None of it is useful here.
Like, you're like in the wrong country.
Yeah, because I mean, like, I remember being so shocked that, I remember like my teacher told us a week before we went out to Kansai. She was like, by the way, I'm also from Kansai, so it's a little bit different. Like, it's a tad different, but you'll be fine. Like, and like she gave us like this slip of paper which had things like very simple Kansai ben. So I had like ikanai, ikahen, and then like kawanai, kawahen. And I was like, okay, so nai becomes hen. Okay, if I remember that, I'll be fine. It's like, that's not the only rule. Like there's so many more. but my first thing when I was there, which was the most shock about, I mean, this is more so, less so Japan, more so being in Kansai. But, you know, people were just speaking so differently. That at first I was like, I had like an overload in my brain. I was so tired every day trying to keep up with it because there were bits that I could understand because obviously there was little bits, which like little grammatical things, which don't even change, right? So I could kind of like follow. But then I was just there being like, I can kind of hear you, but then I don't understand you because like some of the important words I just didn't get. So the Kansai ben did really throw me off at first. That was one thing. That was a big shock.
Yeah, I mean, must have been a whole brain workout for you every day. Oh, man.
I mean, I was Googling every day, being like, I need to find some standard Kansai ben like class. Like, I can just like learn this.
I mean, I find it really funny that your teacher was like, oh, by the way, before you get on the plane, everything you learned, yeah, they don't do that over there.
Yeah, it was so funny. I was like, I can remember turning around to everyone in class being like, is she joking? Like, like what did we just do for 6 months? What? And it's like completely different. Like, what? Yeah, it's so funny. Like, I remember, yeah, just being so shocked.
I mean, you can kind of see a connection.
What have I wasted my time on until now? Like, learning Hyojungo? Why did I do that?
I mean, they did prank you the second you got the interview. So, I mean, I guess looking back on it, maybe you could have seen it coming. But I guess hindsight is 20/20.
Also, same woman, by the way.
Same woman, teacher.
she went for the long run prank.
Oh, man. Wow. You really don't see that often.
Yeah. She was in it for the long run.
This is a bigger plot and oh man, this is actually starting to sound like a really big anime right here. It's a antagonist from the shadows or something. Oh man. What have we gotten ourselves into? It's a conspiracy here. Yeah. The Oxford Japanese program. Be careful, guys.
Make sure you know what you're getting yourself into. Oh my god, I might get sued for this. This sounds really negative.
Oh man. The Kodakara podcast, we support Oxford wholeheartedly. This is we're making no claims whatsoever, so don't worry.
It's all based on experience.
Lawson will sponsor you guys on TikTok, don't worry about it. Which will also be sponsored by us, the Kodakara podcast.
Be a joint sponsorship.
A joint collaboration here, but don't worry, there's nothing going on here. We will not expose you at all. People can make their own thoughts and judgments based on what they hear. So don't worry, Oxford. Don't worry. Yeah. Don't worry.
Disclaimer.
Yeah, we got you. But if you do want to do something, remember, you guys can also sponsor the Kodakara podcast in case you're listening. So feel free to do it. Don't worry.
We won't get in your way.
Oh, we got the 103. You're right. Oh, man. Never would I have imagined doing a podcast and a marketing course at the same time.
Dude, you could just upload this video on YouTube and put it like Marketing 103. Hashtag Japan.
True. Maybe we will. That's the or maybe we'll go put this on Patreon. We'll just go and change up the title. You know, if you want to learn a little marketing lesson, come through on Patreon. We got you.
The same video, but a different title. Yeah.
That's marketing 104 right there. Oh, man. So I guess now you're kind of in a very, I guess, thrown into the fire is a one way to put it. So I guess then what was kind of your strategy to kind of go and get on top of it, or at least start understanding? Because, I mean, you aren't there for a very, very long time, but you have a solid fundamental base in Japanese, and you're kind of getting this workout every day. So did you kind of figure out like a strategy or something you came up on your own to kind of overcome this, or at least understand Kansai Ben better at this first juncture?
Yeah, so I was only there for 4 months, so for one term in the summer. But what I did is this might sound a bit weird, but I made sure to basically hang with just Japanese people who are from Hyogo and Osaka. So I mean, a lot of people, when they go and study abroad in Japan, they tend to hang around with people from their same country or other English-speaking exchange students. So you kind of like lose the whole ability to practice your Japanese. It kind of like is really unfortunate for the whole experience in itself. But being there and being like, I should understand this, but I can't. So I was like, okay, the best thing I can do is just hang with the natives. So I was hanging with people from Hyogo, people from Kobe and Osaka. And I made some really good friends, and we were hanging out all the time. And basically, I just made a conscious effort to copy them. My personality right now is a bunch of like 20-ish people from Osaka mixed together from 10 years ago. But I was copying people, what they were saying. We used to do a lot of like nomikai, so we'd go for drinks, and that'd make it easier for me to copy people. And I was very intent in listening to how people were saying things. And what they were saying. And if I didn't understand, because they were such good friends of mine, I made sure to ask. I was like, what does that mean? Like, that's not... And they were like, oh, so, okay, what I just said is... And I basically break down the Kansai Ben and explain it in standard Japanese for me.
Right.
So I remember, like, so one thing... do we have this conversation? Yes, let's have this conversation. So I remember, so at the time, my Japanese friend would ask me, he'd say, tomadachi orahen no? And I was like, orahen no? Like, what? That's not a verb. So then, and then I remember asking him, like, what is orahen? And he'd be like, hen in Hyojung is nai. And so that would be oranai. And oranai, well, really, that is like oru, which means iru in Hyojung. So inai becomes orahen. So things like this, where I do this quite often. Like, I was really lucky with my friends around me because they were all really like laid back, and they were really happy to teach me their culture and their language, because obviously there's not many foreigners who kind of like go out of the way to learn. I mean, there's actually quite a few like these days. They crop up on the internet like me, but like Osaka Ben or like Kobe Ben or learn like Kansai Ben in general. People mostly learn Hyojunga. So my friends are really happy for me to say, can you tell me, like, because I want to be able to say that, but obviously if I don't know what that means, I can't say it. So there was a lot of kind of asking and learning. It was very, very analog, but I just did get people to help me out and teach me the very basics. And then like the more you do that, I mean, after 4 months, I kind of would like understand bits and bobs of it. It wasn't 100%, I'm not gonna lie. Like, when I came back after 4 months in Kansai, I wasn't coming back like a Kansai Jin Osan or like a classic, you know. I was still speaking like like it was half Hyojungo, half Kansai Ben, which is really like actually kimochi wari, because it was like, where have you been? have you been to Gifu? Like, have you, where why are you speaking half Hyojungo, half Kansai Ben? Like, what happened to you? Like, you know, it's just like really confusing for everyone. So yeah, when I was out there for the first time, I tried my best to just kind of get the basics down of Kansai Ben.
Right.
And then I think it was when I went back out the second time a few years later for a whole year, I had a better base of Japanese understanding and a better base of the Kansai Ben as well, to then kind of push my Kansai Ben to get even better.
I see.
So I was lucky.
Did
that
you
I kind
the
of
same school?
No, I went to one which is close. So first I went to Kangaku, Kansei Gakuin and Daigaku. And then the second time I went to Kobe University. So Kobe is like further into Kobe. but yeah, I mean, still like many, many Kansai people in both universities because of obviously where they're situated. So it's very, very easy just to speak Kansai Ben every day.
Right.
And have an opportunity to understand it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really interested in kind of the application process you had to get those friends, because you said that you made sure that you only spoke with people who were from there rather than anywhere else. So you had to go and make sure you had to do a background check. Okay. You probably hit
them. Sorry, where are you from? Tokyo. Oh, but I don't know you then. We can't be friends. Just to clarify, I wasn't that mean. I still have friends of Tokyo. You're off the list.
Yeah, you probably set it up. I'm the founder of Lawson. So if you want to work here,
I actually do that once.
Yeah.
I actually told someone once that my grandfather made Lawson, and they believed me.
Oh man!
Like there was this guy at university who really wanted me to teach him English.
Right.
But like, for me at the time when I studied abroad, I was like, I mean, this is my time to learn. So I'm not really here to teach anyone English, even in my spare time. Like, I just kind of want to focus on learning Japanese.
Right.
And then he wouldn't leave me alone. He kept asking me. So I just had to say, look, I'm actually quite famous. Like, my granddad owns Lawson. And he actually believed me and then stopped messaging me. Right. I was just like,
a very powerful.
I didn't know
person.
It was that easy. Yeah, I'm just lying. I was like, I'm famous. I'm a celebrity. Like,
add that to the resume. TikTok star. And
third generation Kombino.
Yep. There. I'm lost in the third.
That's what it says. Oh my God.
Oh man, I mean, I'm glad to have such a distinguished guest of honor on the show today. Eric and I are very pleased for you to make it here. I mean, not only do you do that, you have a YouTube channel. Very, very honored to have you on today.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah, I hope you can go through and hit us up with a couple Pocari sweats or something on the house, you know.
Just... Yeah, I'll send them over. I'll ship them over.
Oh wow. Okay. Oh man. Very, very generous. Make sure to go to Lawson when you guys are in Japan, or if you are in Japan. We don't do Family Mart here. We don't do 7-Eleven. We only do Lawson.
Oh my God.
And also, Lawson is sponsored by the Korekara podcast. So
use discount code Korekara at Lawson
at checkout. Oh my God. for a 5 yen discount. We got you.
Breaking the bank.
We'll shave the extra tax that they put on there for you. We got you. Not really, but maybe if you guys use a discount code enough, maybe it'll become 50 yen. we're working our way up. Maybe 500 yen someday.
Oh wow.
Someday. It's I'm really gonna make Lawson lose a lot of money, but if you tell them you guys came from the Korekara podcast, it's going to be, you guys are going to be winning. Lawson's going to be winning. We're going to be winning. And most importantly, we're going to be winning. I'm just kidding. But yeah, I mean, having third generation Konbini owner here, I mean, one thing that you did mention in your videos is that you really love the convenience of Japan and being in Japan. And I mean, I guess it runs in your family, it runs in your blood, the convenience, the konbini. Most importantly, the konbini. I mean, who, imagine having a whole chain named after you, walking a city and just seeing your name everywhere. I mean,
it was meant to be.
It was meant to be, being that famous in Japan on a study abroad. Who would have thought?
Yeah.
But I mean, now here for the second time, have a stronger basis with Kansai Ben after kind of getting the initial gist of it. And I guess you're kind of going around living life a little in Japan after second time about, kind of, you know what's up here. You know, it's more so, okay, I want to learn the language, the environment isn't hindering me, it's helping me. So I guess what would you say is maybe one of your favorite conveniences in Japan?
So one of the things I love most about Japan, and this is probably because I come from the UK, so it's quite different to the UK in this sense, but I really feel like in Japan you can do like anything. Like obviously not things against the law, but I mean like like if you want to go bowling at 3 a.m. you can go bowling at 3 a.m. right? Like if you want to go eat candy floss at like 10 p.m. you can go find that. Right, like whereas I mean, where I'm from in UK, shops close at like 5, 6 p.m. and like restaurants close about 10. So like it's very like an early closing lifestyle, right? So everyone's kind of like back at home at midnight. And I always kind of feel like you're kind of using the word lockdown is not really good right now in the COVID arc. Oh my God. But I feel as if like you always kind of hold back in like what you wanted to do, you wouldn't necessarily be able to do it. Whereas for Japan, they've just got everything here. So they've got food from all over the world. And it's not even like the Japanese version of the food. They've got like people from the actual country who live in Japan making the authentic cuisine. You've also got just like any sport you want to do, you can do it at any time. So I really like the fact that it's kind of like it doesn't sleep, which is really good. I mean, it probably makes me sound like I'm a massive like partier, like a party girl. That's really not the case. But I just like the fact that if I woke up on a Sunday morning and I was like, do you know what? I want to have an English breakfast today. I could go get it, right? In Tokyo somewhere. Or if I was like, do you know what? I want to get some jerk chicken. I want to eat some jerk chicken Sunday afternoon. There would be a place selling that. Like, it's just really cool. You can kind of do anything you want. And I mean, everything is really easy to get to. It's a really small area, but then it's so big at the same time, and everything's so accessible. So it's such a good, like, easy place to live. That's one of the things I really like about Japan. I mean, now I guess that's mainly me talking about Tokyo, because I guess when you kind of venture out to Kansai or maybe some more of like the countryside areas, it's obviously not the same. But like Tokyo is really, really easy to live in.
I
I really
see.
like that part of it.
Yeah, I guess we have to add fake partier in quotes to the resume here now. Really, really building on.
Ex-partier. I've
So,
graduated.
graduated. We can put that in parentheses afterwards to let them know. And one other reason I really wanted to ask that question was in your videos, you mentioned that someone always finds a way to put that into the conversation of why do you like Japan, Lawson? So I didn't want to make you feel left out if we didn't go over that in this
No,
conversation
it's fine. It's like the most difficult question in the world.
It
Like,
really is.
I guess you probably have the same thing, right? I'm sure people ask you as well, like,
Oh yeah.
why
Oh
you like
yeah.
Japan. But I always find it so hard to answer that question. Like, only because it's, oh, that's going to sound really weird. But like, I find like when you really like something, you don't necessarily need a reason for it, right?
Exactly. I completely agree.
So like, I mean, I didn't, when I was 14, I was like, this is really cool. Like, this is just really, it looks cool. Like, it's not even the Roman alphabet. It's like little pictures. Like, that's really cool. And I really liked it. I thought it was cool. That's why I started to study it. But obviously, that's not the exact same reason right now. Like, I'm not here being like every day, like, look how cool my kanji are. Like, I'm seeing.
Flip it on the street, have like your jacket open, have the kanji just like on the
Wake
inside.
up, give us yeah, wake up, give myself a high five. Like, yeah, I can write kanji. Like, obviously, that's not, there's a much more bigger picture of it. But it is like just hard to describe about how, I mean, it's like easy living and it's a real laid back culture. Most people are nice here, obviously like in most places as well, but everyone's it's so easy to make friends. It's just a really nice place and a very beautiful language. I really just like the language. There is, I mean, to get quite like in depth on things, I mean, I read a lot of books in Japanese as well, and I find that some of the phrases and the way things are written in Japanese bring over images which you can't really get in English. Some use of certain words and stuff, which I think is good because it kind of opens up your brain to these whole new ideas and visions and images but I've never been able to think of if only you knew English alone, right? So it's all things like that. It's just like overall, yeah, a great place, good language.
Very introspective. I gotta write that down. Next time someone asks me that, I'll have the scripted ready, just ready to
Just
go. Exact
exact
same thing.
I'm gonna have to copyright that script.
I'm glad we're doing this on the podcast. I can write it down afterwards. Yeah, I
You get
mean,
the rights, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to go and object to that, I'll have the Kodakana lawyers ready to go.
From Kodakana Consultancy. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of asked the question as a joke. I was expecting you to be like, I like Japan because I like Japan, but I mean, here we are. And I got, now I'm set up when anyone asks me a question, so.
sorry.
I'm
you just got to do it in British accent.
The next time you see me, I will be British Raza, not Raza. This is a very key difference.
British Raza. British Raza.
This is going to be my British arc. British, oh my god. Oh man, I hope that's gonna be a good arc. Really hoping for it. I wouldn't, it would be very sad if it doesn't go well. Have to go you. Go do some other arc after. I won't even know what to do at that point. I mean, if the British arc fails, what is left, you know? I mean, yeah. but I at least I'll still have your answer to why I like Japan, because yeah. now I know why I like Japan. Thank you. Sponsored by Lawson, the convenience store, and the third generation owner, and the Kodakana podcast. Oh, we got it all here. We got it all here. And I mean, you ended up going and living on, like you mentioned at the start of the podcast, living in Japan for 6 years now. And I mean, you spent time in study abroads, and I mean, where was it at those times, or maybe during time in college, where you decided I want to live in Japan full time and live like my life here?
Yeah, so when I was in university, so I was on a 5-year course, and my second time I went on my year abroad was in my fourth year. So then I went on my fourth year, came back for my final year, wrote my dissertation, and then I graduated. So it was kind of it was towards the end of my study abroad where I started thinking like, oh, I had this like weird realization that, okay, I'm going home. Yeah. Like it was something I didn't want to accept because I really loved my life and my year abroad, because it's so good when you have like no responsibility, right?
Right.
You're an exchange student. You're getting a scholarship. I mean, I got a scholarship from the Japanese government, which paid for my study fees. I mean, obviously I was paying for my own day-to-day fees and stuff, but like it's pretty good, right? It's a sweet 1 year. Like you learn Japanese, you have fun, make friends. It's really, and obviously study. Sorry, like put study at the start. Yeah, if you could just cut that and make that sound better. Yeah, as
like, we get a very abrupt cut where it's just study.
So it's very obvious.
And add that to the resume. We'll put that in the front too of the resume. You're studying.
Yeah.
That's the main thing, right?
Yeah, that's the main part of me.
Yeah.
So yeah, when I was on my end of my year abroad, I started to think quite seriously about, okay, well, I obviously want to come back here. And at the same time, I just obviously had to think about my dissertation. I had my finals exams coming up, so there's a lot going on. And then it's kind of in my final year. I mean, I had my dissertation and my final exams. So I was just kind of studying every day, just consistently in the library. And I was thinking through like, okay, I want to go back to Japan, but I'm not sure how to get back there. And at the same time as well, I was kind of, you know, my main thing on my mind at the time was just to pass my exams, right? Because, you know, if you don't pass your exams, I'm not going to get a job. So like, I had to keep that at the top of my priorities. But I was very lucky in a sense that then there was, I met this company who was a recruitment company for foreigners in Japan. So they hooked me up with many potential jobs, so I went to quite a few interviews. But for me, like, the reason I wanted to go back was quite simple at the time, because I was so busy at the time, I couldn't take too much time thinking about what I was gonna do next. But the way I thought about it at the time was, I was 20, 21 at this time, 21, 22, and I'd started studying Japanese when I was like 13 or 14, if we're including the trial period. So it'd been about 7 years, right? So it'd been about a third of my life at the time.
Right.
Although a very short life. Right? you know, and I'd spent a third of my life studying Japanese. And then 5 of those years, right, in Oxford, like everything, every day was just about Japan, like history, politics, language, everything. And then I lived in Japan for a year and a half as well. So Japan was a really big part of my life. And for me, to not then work in Japan would just be stupid. In my eyes at the time, I kind of boiled it down. I looked at it and I was like, look, if I spend 7 years and I've spent, obviously, I had to pay for Oxford, right? Like all these fees and stuff, and like all the time I spent abroad, money I've spent on this, and all that work I've put in, the hours I put in to learn the language and everything, for me to then not go to Japan and use that, it just wouldn't make sense. Like it would be like, would I just probably end up working in London, like in some company, probably never using Japanese again. And then like 10 years down the line, I'd be like, oh yeah, I used to speak Japanese. I remember Honmoni Lawson. Yeah, I remember him. He my alter ego. He was alive once, you know? So yeah, it was very simple for me in a sense that I was like, I need to make the most of the experience and all the sweat and all the hours I put in up until now. I need to use that because otherwise it's just stupid. So for me, it was very easy to make a decision of, okay, I need to work in Japan. Because I could have worked in London in a Japanese company, but to be honest, I mean, I've never done that, so I'm not sure how it really is. But even if I did work in a Japanese company in London, I don't think I'd use Japanese that much, to be honest. Right. There might be the odd time where you have to be in a Japanese meeting, but probably it won't be the most like best use of my Japanese ability. So for me, it was, I just have to go. I have to go to Japan. And I made that decision.
Right. And I mean, real quick, if anyone is interested in your dissertation, it is available on your YouTube channel, right?
Oh God, that video. I saw that the other day. That's such an embarrassing video, isn't it? The lack of editing is hilarious. Oh my God.
Hey, I mean, the early Lawson the Third back at it, you know?
Oh, it's so embarrassing. I actually like cropped up on my, I didn't know why I came across that the other day. It just happened to be on my screen. And I looked at it and I was like, I didn't even edit out me setting up the camera. Like you can see my like hands going like this. And then I like huddle back and like, hi everyone, I'm Lawson. Just, oh my God. Who is this guy?
It's your alter ego, right? The one that you didn't want to let go because, I mean, as you got to build that up as well, you know. all part of the plan. Staying in Japan, building up the alter ego, building a life there, and also getting married, right? I mean, that's a very big point in your life, very huge moment. I mean, what was that experience like? Because, I mean, a lot of people you see go to Japan and maybe live there for a couple years, but not always do people fully root their lives there and kind of go and just live on fully, right? And I mean, you've been married there, and I mean, of course, again, Japan is like a different country, and I mean, you've had a lot of experience with it, but this is a life-changing event right here, you know?
Massively, yeah.
Yeah. And so I guess, what was that event like for you? I mean, getting married in a different country and like finding the person that's like meant for you.
Yeah. So I met my wife at my job. So when I just started working, I had training and she happened to be, I had like one training day in a certain area and she happened to be at the same training. And I was like, uh-oh. Found the one. It's you.
Romance arc coming through.
Oh no, not the romance arc. So it was, you know, it was very, very meant to be. Oh God, it sounds so lovey-dovey. Yeah, we were very lucky to have met her, because if I didn't meet her that day, I probably would never ever met her.
Oh wow.
So yeah, and then we started dating after that, and then how long we? I proposed after being together for like a year and a half. It was actually quite fast, actually. But I mean, for me, I saw it as like, you know, she is the one, so there's no point waiting around, right?
Right.
It's either happening now or 10 years down the line. So when you think about inflation, now
this is not even marketing anymore.
Yeah, what do we call this part of the podcast?
Marriage 101, I guess. Marriage 101. Tax benefits.
But what was really interesting, right, about marriage in Japan is, I mean, I'm from the UK. And so, I mean, my sister is 12 years older than me and she's got married and she has kids and stuff. So kind of like all my perceptions on things are based on her, what I've seen happen with her. Right. In the sense that she got married when I was 18. So that was like, oh, so this is what an English wedding's like. And then she had kids a few years later. And I was like, okay, so this is what having kids is like. Right? That's kind of what my, this is what my perception is. And then obviously came to Japan, it's completely different.
Right.
So, so different in the sense that, I mean, there's, I could talk about this for hours, but to go through just some of the basic things, like in Japan, people get married sometimes very quickly. So as in, like, in England, people will be, like, get engaged for a year, maybe a year or maybe 2 years, and then you have the wedding on that day, then you sign the registry, and then you're finally officially married.
Right.
In Japan, sometimes people just wake up and they're like, should we just sign the registry? I mean, I think we should. We've been together 3 years now. And then, like, so it's, which is something which I don't understand. And there's lots of things where, like, if the husband... would the future husband, if the partner gets, for example, moved in their company from like Tokyo to Hokkaido, then they might get married then. And then, so then the wife can go with him or something like that. It's like, it's a very different culture, like a different approach towards marriage from what I've seen. So I found it quite interesting as well that like the marriage, like having, so our wedding, my family came out to Japan for my wedding and my friends from high school and university came as well. But also weddings as well is like really different here. Mine's really funny because I work in a very, very Japanese company. And because it's like regarding marriage, it's kind of old school in the sense that you will have like your head of department give a speech at the wedding, right?
Oh, uh-huh.
So I was lucky because my boss was my head of department and he was a really cool guy. So I was completely fine with having him give a speech at our wedding because he's a cool guy. Like, you know, sometimes, I don't know, you don't get on with your boss or whatever, but I really got on with him. So I was completely fine with it. Right. But I remember trying to explain to my mum. She was like, so what's the schedule like? So I was like, okay, so we're going to have the cake cut here. And then we're going to have a speech from my boss. And then we're going, so I was like, she's like, what? Speech from a who? And I was like, from my boss. I mean, she's like, what, why? why is your boss invited? You know, like. My family found it very hard to understand because obviously in England, you wouldn't even necessarily invite your boss unless you were friends, you know?
Right.
But in my company, you usually invite your work colleagues as well. Like, so we kind of had to find a good good area where it's like half British wedding, half Japanese wedding, everyone happy. So like that was really interesting, trying to juggle everyone's expectations in that sense. You know, I was like, just so you know, as you probably do, I'm English. So we're going to do a bit of it like UK style. Like it won't all be Japanese. And then going to my family being like, so you know, I work in a Japanese company. So some of it's going to be a bit Japanese. Like, so just like, that was really interesting.
The marriage arc right there.
What's the next arc?
Oh man, we're eventually gonna hit the COVID arc, right? Arc right now. Oh man, I mean, it sounds like balancing both sides. I mean, that's really interesting. I mean, actually having to deal with that dynamic with your boss over there. I mean, it's a good thing that you got along with him. I mean, I can't imagine it'd be like if you didn't get along with him and you just have some dude kind of just going off at your wedding.
It would have been some random guy just speaking, you know, like at the most important day of your life, right? I'm just, I wouldn't have liked that. I would have been like, can we not invite him?
You
know,
like, you got like the wedding video and you just completely cut that part out and erase the footage.
Yeah, like some of the cuts that might happen in this podcast. Very abrupt.
Very, very abrupt. I like to study.
Here's my we
lost in his only. He's only going to be shown in a good light here today, as well as Oxford, as they are one of the sponsors of today's episode. Hopefully, they still are by the end of the episode, but don't worry. We're waiting for you to shout us out. By the way, yeah, so we got you covered. Kodakata podcast marketing 105. We went 105. Back.
Oh my God. I think we skipped 104. Or did we? No, we didn't. I don't know.
Well, we'll just say we had a little marriage detour, marriage 101 detour, yeah. Little part of marketing 104. just because it was a bridge to Marketing 105. But
yeah,
I mean, maybe, I mean, I guess in a way the boss sponsored your wedding by, unfortunately, without much you could do there. But hey, at least your family got to experience some Japanese culture. Hey, guys.
Yeah,
I'd like you to meet my boss. He's going to be sick.
That's literally how it went as well. So yeah, that's my boss.
Those are like the first and the last time they saw him.
literally, like, yeah, it's true.
Yeah, imagine that being on your most important day. You get the one side character that appears once, and... Why is he here? I don't know. We don't know. No one knows. But he's in the middle of everything. Why is this happening? Yeah, I mean, hopefully he was a good side character. Very memorable. I mean, at least you get to tell the story now. I have.
He was a good guy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, did anything change after he spoke to you at your wedding, or was it just like business as usual afterwards? I mean, for you, it must have been a lot more different than kind of his perception, right? Like, oh, I'm going to my 20th marriage to speak
this year.
And you're like, man, this guy just spoke at my wedding for no reason. How are you going to work next day?
He was so cool though, because basically, so when they give a speech, right, I like usually it's in just in Japanese, right. But obviously I had a translator or like an interpreter at my wedding, because obviously my family and friends can't speak Japanese,
right?
So obviously I didn't expect them to sit through like 2.5 hours of just like Japanese, right?
Yeah,
like after coming on like a 12-hour flight, jet lagged, like I just like obviously that would be so like not nice. So I said to him, because so my boss at the time, he worked in America, in our office in America for a few years, so he could speak English as well. And I said to him, like, this is really hard for me to ask you because I don't know how to say this without potentially offending you. But I know you're doing a speech. Could you also do it in English? Because we have an interpreter, but I know you speak English. But then at the same time, I don't want to like, you know, give you more work to do because you're my boss. It was so hard to ask. I was like, I don't know how to ask. Like, because it's just me saying, could I give you more work to do for my wedding, right? And in the end, he was like, ah, fine. Yeah, fine, I'll do it. And then he, like, just came out with a massive, like, amazing English speech.
Oh, wow.
And then all the Japanese people from my company in the wedding were just, like, jumping and, like, clapping, being like, oh, my God, look, he's nailed it. Look, in English. Yes. Like, everyone was loving it. It turned into a party all of a sudden, like...
Yeah, that's what we'll be like after the show. We'll give you a round of applause for coming on. A TikTok star, multi-talented, studies hard. That's at the top of the list, actually. Let me go cut that out, put it back at the top. My bad. That's pretty insane, though. He was like, oh, overtime. I got you. Don't worry.
Yeah, it was really cool of him. I really appreciate it. Such a nice guy.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds amazing. Just coming through all the way. And
it is, literally.
Marriage art coming to a good close. You love to see it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you didn't love to see it, that'd be a problem.
Yeah. You never want the marriage art to come to a close, though.
you're right. I guess the event came to a close. The marriage art.
We should be careful of the words in here.
Oh, you're completely correct. The Korekara podcast fully supports marriages, Lawson's marriage, as well as every other marriage here. The marriage arc never ends. Sponsored by the Korekara podcast. I'm just kidding, but maybe one day we'll sponsor a wedding, the Korekara marriage.
Can you imagine?
It's the next subsidiary, potentially. Yeah. I wonder how, where in which marketing course down the line we'll incorporate marriages. But hey, maybe it'll be coming through soon. But I mean, it's always, you love to hear a feels good story. And I mean, another feels good story is, I mean, you spent so much time in Japan, and I mean, coming in and being with the in tune with the language for so long. I mean, like you mentioned, like the second time you studied abroad, you had solid fundamental base, like you learned a lot more and very much more in tune with the language. after all this time fully living in Japan, what would you say your Japanese has gotten to? Because I mean, a spoiler alert, it's really good. You guys should go check out Lawson's video to go see for yourself. But I mean, how would you personally kind of rate your growth since kind of living here full time?
Yeah, so to give out some like dates and stuff of where I've been in my life, with, like Japanese. Specifics. So on my year abroad, I passed N1. So that was, how old was I? I must have been about 23. So it's about 9 years in studying Japanese, and I passed N1. Even at that time, so on my year abroad, I really thought like I've passed N1. I'm a god. I'm a god now. Like people will love me. they will think of me as one of their own. I am Japanese.
I've done it.
but I really wasn't, yeah, as fluent as I thought I was at the time. And then now I've been working. So I'm in my sixth year now working in this company, where pretty much every day, 99% of my job is in Japanese. So, I mean, I do use English from time to time, but the majority is very, very easily to Japanese. So that's been 6 years of doing business Japanese now, which is something which I'd never done beforehand, which is something which I think looking back on my year abroad, I did really like understand that I really need to work on like my keigo and my polite Japanese, and that there was still many more levels to go. And I still believe there is more levels to go, but there was always more levels.
Right.
But in the last 6 years, my Japanese has gone like through the roof with like improvement in regards just to experience and the immersion. I mean, in my first year when I was in my Japanese company, and because it's a Japanese company, being a first year, you're like a fresher, you're like, you know, you're the bottom of the hierarchy, right? So so there's like a lot of phone picking ups and like speaking to people you don't know and doing a lot of all this little stuff that no one really wants to do. But I remember being like struggling picking up phones and talking to people and writing their names down and stuff, you know? And that's after like, that was what, how many years into learning Japanese? Like 10, 12 years into learning Japanese. And I'd still find it hard for like a random person on the phone, just phoning me up all of a sudden being like, I'm from this company and I'm from this department and this is my name and this is what I'm doing and this is who I want to talk to, right? And I'd be like, dude, like, chill out. Send me an email, like, or a fax. We still accept faxes. But like things like that was really difficult, even then. But then now, after 6 years with, you know, working every day, my business Japanese and my keigo is like completely fine. I don't know what levels I could give you. I mean, I guess one of the highest things is N1, I guess, from what people mostly know, but I'd say it's higher than that. Because that's like almost like an entry gate into becoming completely fluent, as in the sense that you've got a whole lockdown on the, oh, I used the word lockdown. That's not good. A whole lockdown on the grammar. It's just in my head. The COVID arc's in my head.
No, the COVID arc. Not like this.
I'm just linking you on to the next chapter very smoothly. I feel as if N1's like just good for grammar and stuff and like being able to know it, all the grammars exist. But then the next level is when you go into using keigo and working in a Japanese company, that really, I mean, that put me in an area where I was like really uncomfortable for a long time. Like my first year or two working in a Japanese company, you already, all of a sudden you have responsibility. You're no longer like a jugakuse. You're no longer like a silly student, like who's just coming here to like, you know, have fun. Right, like you're responsible. You got a job, because like, and like your money depends on it, right? So all of a sudden, I was in this situation where you have to speak Japanese properly, you have to speak keigo properly, and like customers have their tachiba, and I'm lower, like, and I have to be politer, I have to be the politest. So that really improved my Japanese. Like I don't know how I can tell you to explain how good it is right now, but it's definitely like, I mean, on the phone, people don't know I'm Japanese until I say my name now. They don't know I'm English until I say my name. So it's really funny now when I try to book a restaurant, because like at the end, they'd be like, can I have your name? And I'd be like, my name's Lawson. And they'd be like, what?
The convenience store?
Like, are you the konbini? And I'm like, no. Not this again.
Imagine a konbini just pulling up to a restaurant.
Yeah, literally. So yeah, So that's the level I'm right now. Like when I phone, people don't know until I say my name, which is fun, but also has its funny downsides to it.
So at work you use Hyojungo, and then at home you use...
Yeah. So this is really interesting as well, because people ask me this a lot as well. When I speak like Keigo or like polite Japanese, because I've only ever really spoken that in Tokyo. So this is actually really interesting. I find this really interesting. Because I've only ever spoken that in Tokyo, my Keigo is much more Hyojungo. Like it's so much closer to Hyojungo. But then when I'm at home speaking with my wife or my friends, I'll just speak Kansai then when I speak like Tamaguchi, which is like completely, it's really funny at work now, because so I have some kohai, so people who are younger than me in my department. So obviously to them, I can speak Tamaguchi because I'm older, right? But then to my senpai, I have to speak Keigo. So like I speak to my senpai in Hyojungo, and when I speak to this guy, I'd be like, nande yanen? Omae nan yuttenen? And then I'd speak like Kansai then. And people just looking around like, what is this guy? Like, what is he? Where are you from? Like, who made you? People just get so confused. It's really funny. So yeah, I do kind of mix it up. And also another thing I've heard as well, my senpai has told me beforehand, is that when I'm kind of like, wait, what's the word to say? Like when I'm kind of like, asetteru, like when I'm a bit kind of like trying to explain something, but someone doesn't understand. Right, not because of my language, but they just can't understand what I'm trying to say. Right. And I'm just like trying to find a way to say it in many different ways to get them to understand my point or like what I'm trying to say. Then apparently I just become Kansai Ben. Like, so if I kind of like let go, like unleash myself, the Kansai Ben comes through even in Keigo. So it's very interesting.
Unleashed part two. Lost unleashed. Buzz.
I heard that like, people from like people who are native Kansai, they're kind of strict. Like some people are kind of strict on other people who try to speak Kansai.
Right, right. This happens.
Have you ever had like a situation where like someone tried to like challenge your Kansai Ben?
Yeah. So this is also you're completely right. I've had this. So this is one of the hardships of being Honmeni Dosan, right? Like so when sometimes when I speak. So, for example, when I'm speaking Keigo and it's like not as much Kansai Ben, it's more Hyojungo, people be like, Zenzen Kansai Ben Chouyan. And then like some Kansai people can be like sometimes quite proud about the Kansai Ben. So if your Kansai Ben is not 200%, some Kansai people will be like, yeah, you're that's not Kansai. That's Hyojungo, bro. You're speaking like you're from Tokyo. So, and I've met people like that. And then I'll just respond to them in Kansai Ben being like, you just sound like a loser, you know, because like I've met so many people from Kansai who, I mean, with Kansai Ben, there's so many levels and so many ways to speak it, right? It's like there's Kobe Ben, there's Osaka Ben, there's Kyoto Ben. And then if you go to the south of Osaka, there's like a complete different, like Kansai Ben exists. And then you've got people who like, so it was really funny as well. When Kansai people come to Tokyo, there's mainly two ways it goes, right? They either just go really Kansai and will never ever speak Hyojungo. Or they go really Hyojungo, but it's a bit like, you can tell they're not from Tokyo. like there's a little bit of like a Kansai Ben in it, which makes it a bit like, where are you from? Like, it's Hyojungo, but it's not, right? So you always get, like, there's always just such a different way to speak, so many ways to speak Kansai Ben, right? Even like for me, I learned in Hyogoken, but then most of my friends are from Osaka. Like, so they would, for example, you know, like the verb to come, like kuru. And then like, Hyojungo, you say konai. And then in Osaka, you say keihen. But then in Kobe, you say kohen. So like all these things, like where there's just so many different ways to say it, right? So there's no like definitive Kansai Ben, right? But there are some people who are like, oh yeah, well, you're not one of us. You're not speaking it correctly. So I have had it, but then I just like ignore them. And I'm like, yeah. I mean, if I was speaking to you impolitely, you wouldn't be saying that. You'd be saying my Kansai Ben's really kitanai. So. Like, but yeah, I do get that sometimes.
One of those kind of like fraternity, kind of like, oh, you're just not an Alpha Kappa Psi.
But then sometimes I get the opposite. So when even if I speak like just a little bit of Kansai Ben, like most of the times with me, it's usually I get the response of people being like, yo, we're speaking the same lingo. We're like, you're Kansai Jin. You're one of us. So that was really good when I started working at my company, because there was about 30 people from Kansai, and then like in my year group, and then there was loads of people from like Kanto. And then when we had like a nomi kai, and I was speaking to the guys from Kansai or the girls from Kansai, they were like, yo, you're not even gaikokujin, you're one of us. You're one of us, man. And then like they took me in as one of their own. So it was really easy to make friends, because they were like, yeah, we're in this together. There's loads of people from Tokyo, right? Yeah, not many of us Kansai. So like I also get that as well, where people are actually really positive about it and really happy that I'm speaking their language, like, you know, like their home language.
Right. And time to start a turf war, bring out the coalition of Kansai within the company. The uprising.
The uprising.
Soon the company is going to be owned by Lawson, and it's going to be a Kansai hierarchy.
And people will only be allowed to speak Kansai then at work.
Yeah, if you're from Tokyo, if you don't have a TikTok, you can't, you're not welcome there. It's a new requirement. You also need to study hard. That's actually at the top of the list.
Full circle.
And I mean, I guess moving on to the latest arc, I mean, the dreaded, I don't know if we should even say it out loud. It's just, you might get tagged. You might get tagged. Yeah. So.
Oh, right. Yeah, true.
We can't be speaking about this in the light.
Just say it rhymes with
Novid.
Brovid. Brovid 18.
Brovid 18. the Brovid 18 arc. So, I mean, we can keep this short, because I know you talk a lot about this on your channel, Lawson. So
I did have a little period of time. I was like uploading every day.
You had the arc complaining.
Being like, guys, come on. My channel is the arc.
true. So if for a more in detailed arc for Brovid 18, make sure to check out Lawson's channel. But I guess for kind of like a brief look into kind of what you think or kind of thought about how Japan has been handling Brovid, what would you say is kind of like the general gist for you?
Yeah, so I've been here throughout the whole Brovid-19 thing. So I guess it started last February in Japan. Now it's been, a year and 2-3 months. At first, like, Japan was really slow to pick up on it, which was, that wasn't too good. and then you kind of had this period where, Japan could have gone to try and change the constitution, to change the law, to allow them to enforce an actual proper lockdown. But then they were like, nah, let's not do that. So they had like the soft lockdown where they asked people to promise to not go out, which a lot of people didn't, to be honest, like fair play to the people living in Japan. But now they're just not even vaccinating people. So it's like not that good in a sense that the Olympics is like 100 days away. and you've got, I mean, I know that spectators can't come to Japan now for the Olympics or whatever, but you've got the Olympics happening and they've just started vaccinating the elderly people. Like, I think you have to be over 65. And I actually saw some figures the other day. I think it's like UK is like 60% vaccinated the whole population. This could be completely wrong, so please filter in the real figures into my voice afterwards. Dub it in. 60. And then Japan was like 0.38% or something. Wow. And like, I mean, and then I think America was like something like 70 or 80. Like, I don't know. Like, America seemed to be really like giving it hard on the vaccination thing as well. You know, lots of European countries as well, just like 60%, 50% done. Japan's like 0.3%. I'm like, oh, come on. It's not even 1%. So now it's a bit like, it has been really slow. Yeah, to sum up, yeah, I know you don't want to spend too much time on the Brovid-19 phase. Arc.
The arc.
But, it's just been very evident that Japan is slow in things like this, you know? Right. meetings about whether to have a meeting about, you know, changing the law to potentially change a soft lockdown to a hard lockdown. Like, it's like 10 steps and you could just do it, you know? So it's kind of like showed that it's very, very clear. And that some of the whole, like the old school Japanese politics have been very slow and very bureaucratic, and many meetings and decisions by many people and one person say no, which means they can't go forward. That's become very, very evident, which has been shown in the last year. Because now, you know, I mean, most other countries are going to be vaccinated by the time we're like into 2%. Like, so like, I mean, it still kind of affects me because I'm not sure if I'll be able to go back to England this Christmas either, because I probably won't be vaccinated by then still. Which then just means it's a bit of a risk, more so for the people of the UK rather than me, but me coming back unvaccinated. But yes, it's been very slow. I just wish that they kind of, you know, it could have been such a good opportunity to change some of the bad aspects of Japanese politics, but then it kind of just like showed them instead, you know, like slow.
if you have a problem, you can send us a fax.
And then we'll have a meeting about who to send it to. Like, it's just like, it's like, come on, like, it's just sticking a needle in someone. It's like, it's really easy.
True. I mean, I feel like not only that, but like even the whole Olympics is such a mess, and I feel like there's so many articles on that where it's kind of getting kind of embarrassing to some degree, you know, where it's like, come on, like you're having scandals within the committee.
Oh my god, yeah, god, oh god, did that, like, was that really big in the foreign press as well? Like the things that were said, like that was ridiculous.
Oh yeah, it was probably, yeah, like the, because I guess you don't have too much coming out of Japan, but right, but when you have that,
we want that coming out.
that'll do it.
Stop it at the gates. Don't let the guy Koku know what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, the Korekara podcast is glad to have internal informants in, so we don't just have those random headlines. We get the entire context of why it's embarrassing from top down. So we're, yeah, glad to see it happen. But one thing we're not embarrassed to ask or really see is your advice for people who are studying Japanese or maybe even trying to learn Kansai, Ben, because I mean, you went through a lot. I mean, you spent like a year and a half over, yeah, in Kansai. I mean, spent a lot of time kind of immersing deeply in Kansai, Ben. I mean, to the, yeah, point where this is what you like kind of speak without thinking, really. It's like, right, your natural, your state of mind with Japanese. So I guess we have many Japanese listeners on the Korekara podcast. So what would you say would be a little bit of advice for them?
For people wanting to study.
Yeah. And maybe like Kansai Ben specifically too.
Yeah. So I think especially like comparing where I was like 14, 15 years ago, in a world where the iPhone had yet to exist. Wait, is that correct? No, is that not correct? Wait, that's not correct. The iPhone did exist.
Oh, yeah.
I think it came out like 2008, right?
2007?
Right? Oh, so it did. Yeah, it did.
It was announced, actually. Yeah, 2008.
Yeah. All right, maybe I just couldn't afford one at the time. That's why it's not in my memory. But I think comparing like 14, 15 years ago to now, it's so much easier to study Japanese now. I mean, there's so many resources online, which is free. You've got these beautiful podcasts like Korekara. Don't forget that, everyone. But Insights into Japan, sponsored by Korekara Podcast. But I know, on a serious note, there's so, I mean, back when I was studying 14, 15 years ago on my own, it was really hard to find resources online for free. Or even if you did find it, to find something which is actually usable. There wasn't much back then. Whereas like these days, I mean, there's so many free sites and free apps, which I would recommend, like if you want to just even get started, just download some of the free apps and some of the trials and just try learning some of the language. Just try it, because you will get hooked. You know, I mean, that's what happened with me. And I would definitely recommend getting some formal classes as well to make sure you get your grammar and your, you know, first initial understanding down and make it correct, because that will be a base for your future studies. So I would definitely recommend that as well. With Kansai Ben, there's actually resources now online as well. at a time, I just had to ask people. It was very analog back in the day. But now there's things online with people teaching Kansai Ben. There's many Kansai Ben YouTubers who are like native Kansai Jing who teach Kansai Ben, both in Japanese and English. So it's really easy now to like get immersion online, even if you're not in Kansai. So I would recommend that as well. But also just live in Kansai. Just try. I mean, obviously, you can't do it right now, potentially with the Brovid phase or arc that we're in.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But living in Kansai and just seeing actually how people speak and hearing it up front rather than kind of like just hearing it online is a whole different experience. So I would recommend if you can study abroad, like you'll always be able to learn Hyojungo. Wherever you go, you're always just learn Hyojungo. But for example, like me, I was lucky to get two chances to go to Kansai. And that is the best way to learn Kansai Ben. So I definitely would recommend trying to get out to Kansai. I mean, there's many scholarships now. There's more than when I was doing it back 10, 12 years ago. There is definitely ways to get out there. So I would recommend going out there, living, you know, making some Kansai Jin friends and just having a good time and then just seeing how it really is the language.
Yeah, you love to hear it. And I mean, we love to have you on the show today, Lawson. I mean, very great words of advice coming from you. And I think it's a solid point to close the podcast for today. And I mean, it's an honor to have Lawson the Third. I mean, not only do you own a third generation Konbini owner, you're a TikTok star, YouTuber. I mean, you've got it all. You're a studier. You really. I gotta keep putting that at the top of the list. I don't know why I keep forgetting. You know,
I'm actually looking forward to what you write in my blurb. so interested. Like, how are you gonna do it?
Just take the keyword. That's what it's gonna be.
It's just gonna be hashtags. Studier. Lawson the Third.
Partier. Former.
Former partier.
Oh, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, I had the whole application process for finding friends. I mean, it's a lot in this. I mean, many arcs. You got the highs and the lows. Oh man,
yeah.
We really just kind of brought out a little bit of the script for the upcoming Netflix adaptation. Don't want to give away too much. But it'll be coming. It'll be coming. Don't you worry about it, guys. You'll see a little Korekara Studios on the side over there. The next Korekara. what we're gonna be going into quite soon. We got you covered. We got Lawson covered, and he's got us covered, and Oxford's got us covered. We've got them covered. It's quite a fine line there, but. A lot of sponsorship deals going on in the background here. Created did a few on while we were talking to Lawson. Actually, have my phone right here. A lot of stuff has happened, so appreciate everyone listening. Appreciate Lawson for coming on the show today and being the multi-talented person that he is. And I mean, multi, really everything, the list goes on. I mean, we talked about in the start of the podcast where the resume would get to. And I mean, if I'm going to be frank, I think the resume is still going. It's ongoing here. So I'm going to have to update it as the time passes by. Go back to the video and the podcast episode. But I mean, on to where... Everyone can find you. I mean, there of course there's many places to find you. I mean, you can go to the streets of Japan. Convenience stores right there. But online, where can everyone find you, your incredible Japanese and amazing videos and TikTok?
So I have a YouTube channel called Honmini Lawson. All of my social media and social networks is at Honmini Lawson. Lawson spelled the same as the konbini, as you all know. And I also have my own website, honminilawson.com, which has all my links there as well. So, and I have Insta, TikTok as well. By all means, follow me on all of them if you want updates on my life.
Make sure to follow. I mean, it's very simple. It's the same handle for everything. It's very, very convenient, just like Japan.
Hey! Hey. What a way to wrap it up.
But Well, to formally wrap up the Korekara podcast, we do have the classic message to the Korekara listeners. This is how every Korekara podcast ends, and it could be anything ranging from a fun little message to a Japanese proverb to a shout out to anything your heart desires, Lawson. So to put you on the spot here, light shining bright, jeez, what is your message to the Korekara listeners for today?
Wow. So should I be serious here? I'll be serious.
It's up to you. It's up to you. you could do a mix of both.
Okay. So, to go over, I mean, the way I think, I'm one of the, it's not a proverb, it's more like a saying of the way I kind of try to live my life, especially over the last 10, 15 years, is, it's not even in Japanese though. I mean, it's just an English phrase, but I say in Japanese, but 人生は持ってるより短い. So life is shorter than you think, right? So I always try to, especially with my Japanese learning and just my time in Japan, try and have as much fun as I can with it. It doesn't have to be a boring process. It doesn't have to be a hard, I mean, it will be harder sometimes, but trying to have fun in everything I do. So especially in the Japanese learning and just, you know, everything I'm doing out here. So definitely have fun, especially in your Japanese learning. It doesn't have to be difficult. It doesn't have to be boring. There are many ways to do it. And yeah, just remember that life is shorter than you think and you only get to live it once. So just keep that in your mind every day and go ahead and give it your best.
You love to hear the YOLOs coming out.
Yeah, it's basically a YOLO.
to summarize, YOLO.
YOLO hashtag. Can you add that to my blurb as well? Hashtag
YOLO. Yeah, I got you. Don't worry. Yeah.
Sorry. I knew you had me.
Don't worry. We had you from the start. Don't even worry.
It was already down in the drop.
We got you. But on that note, Lawson, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Pleasure for having me.
Of course. Anytime. And with that, we'll catch you guys later on to the next one. Peace. Hey guys, thanks for listening to our episode with Lawson. Want to quickly shout out our patrons, Sad Boy, Miku, Jack, Your Boy, KH90, and Alan. Be sure to let us know who you would like to see on the podcast next. And until then, we'll catch you on the next one. Peace.